sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing Moon Garden. And so Sean will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts. And then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, I should mention two things before we go to TV Corner. I have a bit of a sore throat. So if I sound weird or I cough, I apologize.
Is this because you were screaming too loud Tuesday night?
That was the other... the second thing I want to get to was thanks, John, for taking me to go watch Idols.
And hanging out with Tony Hawk.
And that's
the
true.
Drummer of Bajas.
Yeah. It was excellent show. By far, one of the best shows I've seen in forever. So, had a lot of fun. So did you, John, when you... not once, but twice, went into a, what would you call this? A mosh pit?
Well,
or a
hug pit.
A hug pit. Love, love pit. Pit.
A passion pit, if you will.
I was kidding. I was surprised. Well, I should start with, like, my favorite song from them. Well, like, I'm an Idols fan, right? I've been a fan of them for a while, and then, but it wasn't until like this last maybe year or so that I've like got really into their music. And one of my favorite songs is Coliseum, right? And so I was like, are they gonna play that song? It's my favorite song, literally the first song they played,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's literally the start of the show, so I was like so pumped. Not to spoil, you know, I think they do this for every show, but so not to spoil how they start the show, but like they divide the crowd at a certain point in the song, right? And then he basically insinuates that he, or you know, entices a sort of love or smashing of each other.
Yeah.
As he splits the crowd into like a left and a right
it's
side.
It's just weird that he says, all right, split the crowd, right, colors on this side, whites on this side.
Yeah.
It's just us screaming, where do the colors go? Where are the colors? We're colored.
Yeah, and then proceeding to, like, as soon as the song kicks back in, they just, people go crazy. Completely, you know, normal behavior. What I wasn't expecting was for you, John, to actually go in there. I was like, John, what the fuck are you doing?
I scanned the perimeter, gauged the crowd, and I'm like, hey, everybody's in their 40s here. It's okay.
I can probably, you know, hang with them. And you proceeded to go into this humanity of people, which was quite surprising.
So much fun. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think somebody, and this was purely accidental, elbowed my sternum. So I did have a sore sternum the next day, but otherwise it was great.
Yeah, at certain points, people were like losing shoes. People were like flinging beer in the air. Somebody was walking around with keys.
Yeah, I remember that.
He lost.
The dude next to me, I don't know who, I don't think it was the guy from Bajas, because we were standing near the drummer of Bajas for a long time. I just assumed it was a big time record exec. I picked up my phone because it fell out of my jacket and was like, is this yours?
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, despite the chaotic nature of it, people were generally nice, you know.
People are like,
good people
losing
there.
Keys. People are literally losing their shit. There was so much.
There was so many
all over the floor. I was like, don't fall, don't fall, please, for the love of God, don't fall.
Yeah, good thing I brought my white shoes to the to this fucking thing.
Yeah.
And that
bags, yeah.
this I know. The other thing was, I didn't expect, you did it once, John. I didn't expect the second time, which is probably my favorite time you went. I don't even know if you recall. I forget what song it was, actually, when they decided to start again. But when they started again, there was like this 8 foot tall guy. He just like muscled me out of the way and was trying to get to like the main area, to the front, or like to the whatever, you know, moshing area. For the sake of a better word, let's call it a mosh pit, right? So he forced his way through and like pulled, like threw me to one side and got up there. And then at some point, you decide to go in again, right behind him. And all I remember, John, was you get right behind him and you like jump in the air full fist right into his back or neck. Which was great. And then like he moved a little bit, but then like you got up and then you did it again. You fucking elbowed him so, looked like very, very hard. And then he kind of turned, but I think at that point you had moved over a little bit, so it didn't look like you.
No, I think I found that guy later. I was like, hey, are we doing the circle pit thing or what's going on? He's like, oh, okay. And he started running around the other corner. But then I lost him. I was like, oh, there's too many people.
Yeah, there's just too many people, yeah.
Mind you, audience at home, I am standing at 5'2". 220 pounds. That's good.
Yeah, and like this guy was like, oh my god, this guy was like taller than me. It felt like he was just a big fucking dude. Like he was fucking huge. I had to fucking forearm him so hard in the back of his shoulders. It was great.
If he wants to get in the pit, he's gotta deal with the zit. That's what they call me. No, I was kidding. Because I'll pop you. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. That is our review of Chucky. Just kidding.
I just want to take a second and just say thank you. That was super fun. I didn't know what to expect, and it was everything and more. So it was a really good time.
We went to the Frolic Room, one of LA's most haunted bars, dive bars.
Yes. That's true. We did. The pregame, yeah, at the Frolic Room. So,
and then on the,
which is apparently haunted, right? There's like an actor that is, I don't know, because I think the Pantages Theater is like connected to it or something.
Oh, it's directly next to it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So then, like, I think that the rude thing is that there's like a ghost or something that an actor or something haunts that.
It was
area.
Also kind of one of the bars that old Hollywood used to hang out at all the time. So to get away from the crowds.
Yeah. Yeah. And we only know this because I think that there's a... what did they call it? Spooky bear...
bear crawl or something?
Bar crawl. Yeah, there you go.
By Spooky Foodie, right?
Yeah.
She's got some fantastic content.
Yeah. Things... I didn't even know about it. Like the Frolic, we saw that video first before we had already been to the Frolic Room, and then that bar popped up or whatever. And I was like, oh, look, we're in somewhere haunted.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great time. And then on the way over, because we are young, strapping men with our friend Jesus, who joined us.
Yeah. Yep.
Shout out to Jesus Christ. I mean, Jesus Cortez, same initials, can't fool me. Did you buy one too? No, right? But we got a little shot from a liquor store because we didn't want to pay $30,000 for a beer. We still I was like, damn, dude.
One PBR.
Somehow this beer was almost as much as the fucking merch I bought.
Yeah, like the merch I get. The merch is fine. Oh, like merch is like... At least it's something you can take home. You can charge whatever you want for it. It's something you take home. It's something, you know, whatever. You paid like $40 or whatever the fuck it was. Whatever it usually is. It's fine. It makes sense. You know, you're buying a t-shirt. Or merch. But a drink. What was the drink special? You get like a tiny cocktail for $22 and then you can refill it for $19 or something.
Something stupid like
that. Is that the deal?
Like, that's not a deal.
I was That's, yeah.
Then a tall boy PBR was like $15.
Yeah, I didn't look at the price. I just bought it. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it was not. That's why I'm learning it's important to pregame before.
You know what? And I'm sorry to detour again. I promise that this episode of Chucky is not bad. That's not what we're doing. It's just a lot's happened. I went to the Ren Faire the previous Saturday. And just a little tip out there. I'm sure everybody's like, no shit, Sherlock. You don't Ren? And I'm like, no, I don't. It's my first time. Pay for the pub crawl, which is almost the same exact price as a ticket, which I know seems ludicrous when you're paying for the thing because you're paying close to $100 for all this stuff. But each beer, like the cheapest beer at each of like the little bars was like, I think like $16, $17. So you're going to get your money's worth if you just pay the $45 for the pub crawl.
Yeah. That's pretty common. Was it like a, what are we talking here? Like a pint of beer, 32, 64 ounce alcohol beverage?
Like a fancy tall boy. So,
like a PBR?
I think like 23 ounces for like, the fancy IPAs. I think I got like Modern Times IPA.
Yeah, I always tend to always be cautious of it because it's like, do I really want to drink? I'm going to be dressed up and like it's going to be super hot and I'm going to be drinking fucking beer. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, I had to. I need to get with the times of the Renaissance.
Renaissance. Yeah, that makes sense.
Everybody was super into it. Like, of course, all the actors there had to be like, oh, what day, good sir? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm going to continue to drink this beer. Arg. See you later.
Grr. Arg. Yeah.
But I think I saw like random celebrities there, which is kind of fun. I think it's like a good place for people that want to do something and not be recognized.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of like, I don't know. And, social media. I'm trying to find another word, influencer, but like my, I don't know, people that pop up on my Instagram that try stuff. We're going to the fair.
We're going to the World's Fair.
We're going to the World's Fair. alrighty. I just wanted to tell people about that. Super fun. If you have an opportunity to watch Idols, they're on tour now. Watch them. Great band. Alrighty. Back to TV Corner, Chucky, Season 1, Episode 6, Cape Queer. I think I should start by saying, because I think we're going to be a little bit different. I enjoy the show, but I think where I'm going to be like,
this entire episode was exactly everything you hated about the previous two episodes. It hyper-focused on the one thing you're like, I don't like that, but hopefully it doesn't matter. It's the only thing that matters now.
they spent this episode doing a lot of like mythology building. So it means a lot of like lore. We get Andy and then his sister or stepsister in the top of this episode.
Kylie.
Kylie.
Spelled like
they,
Kyle.
I thought it was Kyle, but I didn't remember them saying her name. But that's kind of how the episode starts when they're essentially hunting down other
fragments of
parts
souls,
of Chucky's. Yeah. So he's essentially Harry Potter and he's hunting down.
He's essentially, yes. And this is the Order of the Phoenix.
And this is Hermione or Ron. They need a Ron. Unless she's Ron, Kylie. So she might be Ron. Yeah, that should be quick to judge. So basically, yes, they are hunting down the dolls. And they are basically trying to kill different parts of the Chucky soul.
Yeah.
Which I guess should explain. I think you told me this, that the maybe the last two movies before the remake they did with Mark Hamill kind of delves into this side of it. So it's like he basically like folded in the stuff that the creator, Don Mancini, folding in the stuff that he wrote into the series, which makes sense. I'm not trying to like poo-poo him on that. I just don't find this particularly interesting, the lore mythology. I understand why it's there and it's good to have those things, you know, for a TV show. I just, I honestly loved that it felt like a child's, a long eight, I thought this was going to be like an 8 hour Child's Play movie, right?
Yeah.
That's, and I loved the pace and the story, the, you know what I mean? There was like a lot of things happening as like a self-contained thing. Now we're kind of going into like the different movies and everything, and I don't hate it. I'm just lukewarm on it. So there and to your point, like there was a lot of that in this episode.
So yeah, let us know, email us, thread at us. I'm sure Rolando still looks at it. I keep forgetting that app exists.
Yeah.
And let us know if you want us to review all the Chucky, the Child's Play movies, so we have a better understanding of this mythology.
I think we are. We're literally getting it here in the show. It's not, no need to go back and live in the past. Yeah, because I'm actually, like I said, like I'm invested in like the kids and like their story and how they've kind of like reintroduced the Chucky character. So this whole side lore mythology thing is, again, not as interesting and honestly kind of confusing, to be fair. Like they, I don't, the one thing I can say that I'll be a little critical on, and maybe they explained it, but I don't think they like really like hammered it home, was the idea of the character Nika that can't walk. Yeah. How she has a part of, she has a part of Chucky's soul in her, right? Is that why she's able to like tune in that, like basically like chameleon in that of him or something? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Because I think like anytime we see Chucky in something, it's always like a doll, and a doll doesn't have another personality.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really cool idea that he's able to put his soul into other people instead of the doll. Yeah. And this was actually his way of continuing to live on. But the way it's distilled, it's kind of like kind of rushed and a little bit clunky the way it was executed in these past like two episodes.
Yeah, I think that's where it comes into needing to watch the movie.
Right.
But I do appreciate that they, what's the, his, the character's name? The main, the original Child's Play kid? Andy.
Charles
Andy.
Lee Ray. Yeah. The kid,
Andy,
yeah.
Barclay, Alex Vincent's character. They, how he is talking to Kylie and Kylie's like, well, there's only like one more doll, right? And he's like, well, yeah, there's only one more doll. And she's like, what are you trying to say? And he's like, well, he doesn't want to like explain that they have to kill a human because he's not sure how that's going to go over.
Right, yeah. And actually, that's actually something that I was excited to see. So people don't think that I'm just trying to shit all over him. But like, they set up Andy as being the voice over the phone that calls Jake about the doll and tells him like a mysterious phone call. And I like that because it's like they're folding in the stuff from the first movie, and a character that we know has essentially, he essentially was the main character in all three films, right? The first.
Andy Barclay?
Right, yeah, he's
definitely the,
I know he's in the first two, but
the third one, I don't remember if that's him or not. It could be.
I want to say it was. I want to say that he's essentially the series, at least the first three, were focused in on Chucky wanting to take Andy's soul or something, right? Or kill him.
And don't come at us in the comments, but the third one is the one where that the army camp, right? The,
yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's Andy. The military academy. It's so, just played by, yeah, not Alex Vincent. It's played by some other dude named Justin Whalen.
Oh, yeah. I know. He's a, like, if you remember him, he's like very 90 actor.
Oh,
very
dude,
90s.
He was the guy that John Waters made the masturbating guy, the oversex dude, oh, yeah, in Serial Mom. Super funny. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a really good actor. He's fun.
Yeah, he's so of that time, though. I remember him growing up, seeing him and stuff.
So I guess we should talk about the key characters that die, because people do die. Like, there's a car salesman that gets killed.
Yeah.
Which you get to see more of, like, Chucky and fuck, what's Jennifer Tilly's name in the thing? God, Chucky fans are gonna fucking hate
Tiffany.
Yeah, Tiffany.
Chucky's gonna hate me.
How they are obsessed with killing and death and all that, so they buy this car because I think they're fully aware that a family had been murdered in there. I'm almost guessing that they're the people that murdered the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they murder the guy in broad daylight that sold him the car. But the cousin's mom, Devon Sawa's wife, gets murdered after finally having her big reveal that she's got like stage 4 cancer, which we both agreed was kind of a goofy thing to just reveal. And it wasn't anything like more serious or scandalous. And then they have a very, what's the best way to put this? Soap opera idea of, no, I'm going to refuse chemotherapy. I'd rather just have my last moments with my family. You don't realize how precious moments are until now, and I need to tell them. And she, like, had already told her kid and the husband, Devon Sawa, like, you know, I got stage 4 cancer. You know, I'm not going to live. And she's got this, like, real hopeful thing. Like, she's standing near a window, like a full, it's basically a wall, you know, one of those like office buildings where like the walls are windows that reflect outside. And she's just staring out like, oh, this is the beginning of the rest of my life type of deal. And then you got Chucky fucking snickering in the background. I'm like, this is so funny. Like, you know, it's happening, but they're milking the shit out of how funny this is. And he's got a mail cart full of mail. There's nothing else in it. And that is enough to push this lady who cannot, with her own strength, could not push away this mail cart that a doll pushed.
How do you know it's a mail? It's because of its little balls.
yeah, exactly. insert sexist joke on my end too.
yeah, that, no, I just saw Three Amigos. That joke's in Three Amigos, guys. I'm not that clever. I'm sorry.
Because if it was female, it'd be full of pads. Just kidding, sorry everybody. So she can't push the cart out of the way, and not just that, but this cart, it was pushed hard enough, mind you, Chucky's not still pushing this cart, he had like pushed away the cart.
Yeah,
it wasn't like he pushed it into her and out the window. These windows that they build in these offices are so fucking thick, but it was enough to force her out of like the 30th floor or something. And she falls to her death on top of the car she told her son to wait in while she had her little therapy session. Good mother.
Yeah.
Leaving her kid in the car and not saying, hey, wait in the lobby, or hey, wait out here. Nope. Stay in this car. I'm sure the temperature is just dandy.
God, that show's funny. Well, see, this is why, this is actually a plus for the show, because I like that it's like campy and silly and over the top. Like, this is an aspect of the show that I enjoy very much, that the murders have all been meaningful but yet also extreme, to say the least.
I gotta say, I, when that part happened, I was like, damn, that was wild. I'm wondering where they're gonna go with this in the next episode. And it was like, oh wait, we're only halfway through with the episode. It felt like the end of the episode.
So we had another death. We had another death with, I'm looking up her name. I don't know. Did they give her a name?
Detective Devon's mom.
Detective Devon's mom, yeah. Kim Evans. Detective Kim Evans, obviously, is who we're talking about. Died. So the detective that's been kind of leading the charge. Like, she kind of knows something's up, right? Like, she knows she knows about the doll, right? And so,
well,
or she questioned it.
She has an idea of it now because she's like, holy shit, I think it's the doll. And then it almost seems like, because she dies literally at the last like 3 minutes of the episode.
Right, it's a big ending.
Yeah. She looks at Chucky, and it almost seems like, I think Chucky might have probably pushed her, but it really felt like she looked at Chucky and was just like, oh my God, and she just fell back and fell to her death. These mm-hmm. super dangerous stairs that have so much torque in them that they snapped her head right around. I was like, damn.
This is scary. I don't know, man. I've tripped downstairs. Yeah. Falling downstairs hurts.
So. I don't know. I disagree. I'm saying, like, I don't go to a chiropractor because I live near stairs. I just fall down the stairs all the time to realign myself.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the big... that's a death that I didn't expect.
No, it was random.
Yeah.
So now they have literally no adults that know anything about what's going on.
I think, yeah, that's true. That could be why she's gone. I honestly pegged either Devin or Junior to be the ones to die. And so far, they're the only two that are alive. They're still alive, of course. Because I feel like Lexi and Jake are, like, safe.
Yeah.
They seem like the stars of the show.
I think, yeah, Devin's probably got to die so Jake can finally be upset enough. I have a feeling Jake's going to get blamed for all the murders and go to jail when his part of the story wraps up. I don't think they're going to be along because we're on season, what, 4 now?
3 or 4, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. And I want to say Jake is probably in all of these episodes.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's like a for sure thing. I'm not going to like speculate, but I think Jake makes it through the majority of the episodes. And I just assumed, you know, Devin might die because he's I assumed he might die because he's a love interest. But he's also, they've kind of, in this particular episode, he did have more to do in this episode. He watched Cape Fear. He came up with the brilliant idea to, trick Chucky into the house, set up booby traps around the house.
Yeah.
So
they tied a bunch of strings to each of the door handles connected to a doll.
Yeah, just like Cape Fear. Yeah.
What else happened? Oh, you get that quick thing where Chucky in the flashback is reading a Voodoo for Dummies book.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wasn't a Harry Potter book?
No. Harry Potter wasn't around yet. No.
Oh, true. True. Like I said, very good episode. Just don't like all this other stuff. I could go without it. But there's a balance between the two of, like, we're getting the story of the kids, but, hopefully we don't get much more of the mythology.
I will say, yeah, the beginning... Wow, I'm like almost quite literally the very beginning, the right in the middle and the very end are the best parts.
Mm.
The beginning cold open only because it's Andy and Kylie.
Andy, yeah.
Questioning some family where, you know, they set up the house to look so much like the other house that we've been working or like seeing in.
Yeah.
To make it seem like, no, they got the wrong house because we know Chucky's in the other house. And then that's where the big reveal, mm-hmm. like, oh, there's a good guy doll there. And they're suspicious of it. But they, again, do a good job of us thinking, like, no, he's got the wrong doll. And then Chucky is alive in the doll. And Andy fucking shoots it. Shotguns in the face or whatever. Which is kind of what he did in... what do you call it? Like, the end credit scene? For
post-credit?
I want to say Cult of Chucky is what it was in, I think, where there's a random scene where you're like, what is this? Because this has nothing to do with the movie, and this guy gets a package and you only see his hands and you kind of already figured it's probably going to be Andy Barclay, but the package opens by itself because you see a big like chef's knife pop through the wrapping paper and undo the seam, and Chucky kind of creeps out and he's trying to sneak up on this guy, and then you just hear Andy Barclay say like, hey Chucky, And Chucky turns around and he's like, what? And he already has a shotgun and shotguns that doll to death. And that's kind of how that random end scene went, which kind of, this is reminiscent of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Fairly good episode. Curious, there's only, what, two episodes left. So, we'll kind of see how this first season wraps up and how it leads into the second. Alrighty. Now, for something completely different. We're going to move over to our main review of Moon Garden. John, do you want to give us the plot in five words?
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Moon Garden, that came out last year and nobody knew about it. Coming in at number three, little girl needs Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I like that.
That's it. That's all I got. No, okay. Coming in at That's number two for
Bravo.
Moon Garden, 90s nostalgia giving more nightmares. I think I meant to put new ones, but I didn't want it to sound too Wes Craven.
Yeah.
And then coming in at number one for Moon Garden, what if Skinamastink was good?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly the thought I had.
It's like, what if Skinamastink wasn't a bad movie?
For people that don't know, we hated.
For people that don't know about Skinamarink, keep it that way, because...
It's terrible. Or go hear our episode about
it. That's
true. Find that episode. Yes. It's exactly the thought I had while watching Moon Garden.
But it was very like a 90s like fantasy movie like that would get broken up into like a TV thing.
Right. Yeah. I had a very... Moon Garden kind of just takes place in like a haunted dreamscape. Yeah. Surprisingly, I kind of thought this movie would be more arty, you know, more abstract with the narrative, you know, non-linear narrative, but it kind of is like you could follow a story here, you know, like to kind of explain, like a girl falls down the stairs and she gets whisked away to like you know, a dream haunted dream fever landscape. Which was kind of like, I think, the intention of the film.
That just reminded me. I did have another five-word one. I just didn't write it down. It's a, don't leave skates on stairs.
I felt like that's like a forever thing.
Yeah, it's kind of on this little girl for leaving her fucking skates on the stairs. Because
right, yeah.
How they got there in the first place is another question of mine. Like, how the fuck did the skates get...
Well, you know, I mean, you could... Insert any reason, you know, there. I think it's kind of hard to describe this movie. It's like a visual... It's very intent on, like, the design and the... You could tell that the director's intent was to make
it feel like a child made this world, almost.
Right, right.
Because it felt very like the 90s Nickelodeon claymation style stuff, stop motion-y stuff, even though there isn't a whole lot of stop motion stuff.
Or like that weird, what is it? By claymation, I immediately thought of that Mark Twain video about the death. About those kids that meet Mark Twain, and Mark Twain takes them all kind of like weird adventures. And they have that scene where he talks to Death, and Death gets very like explains like the nothingness and meaningless of life. Have you seen this video?
I don't think so.
You've never seen it. I'm pretty sure if I show it to you, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, I do it." But it's one of those. I wanted to kind of like take time to kind of describe it because it's kind of a little like something that we should probably highlight first before we get into what we thought of it.
Well, I feel like it's just heavily influenced by so many things. What, like City of Lost Children, Mirror
Mask.
Yeah, it
was some things we talked about. Mirror Mask.
I'd even say The Fall. The
Fall.
Movie. Fleet Labyrinth. Not the TV show.
Coraline.
Yeah.
it's kind of like a mix of different very high styled fantasy worlds, right? Because so we're essentially in the little girl's mind. But she has a...
As she walks through a Monopoly set, right? I'm just kidding. Because every time characters would... Not die. That's not the right word. They would turn into like little... Look like Monopoly play pieces.
Right, yeah. It's almost like there's... This movie is every... Like almost split up into segments, right? Like, yeah. Oh, we're going to deal with... the musician part and have his little character, and we can deal with this character, and it's like essentially like Alice in Wonderland, right? Yeah. Like it's kind of like she's kind of going to one thing to the other, trying to like escape or whatever, or find her parents.
And I do realize, yeah, that, but you're right, the sets were great. It's, you can tell it's very low budget, but they did a lot with it. It was very cool, like a lot of when like, this isn't a spoiler, right? You know, the whole movie's based on the idea that this girl's in... She's comatose. Mm-hmm. When she first enters this world, like, the... When the bad creature or whatever... Oh, played by... what's her name? Morgana Agnes?
Yes.
Which I talked about a little before we started was... She has played a lot of different characters, but we have reviewed her in... Satanic Hispanics. She is the woman that turns into the zombie king, is what she's credited as, fighting opposite of Jonah Ray.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the pod now. Jonah Ray, actually Latin. He apologized.
Yeah. Sweet guy.
But yeah, that's...
For apologizing.
Did an amazing job. She is birthed, or whatever this creature is birthed. I mean, there's still some sort of like structure. It does look kind of like a woman at first, but then these vine speaker cables go into like these big PA system speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's a little hard for me to follow. I didn't understand how she became a gloop. And then ripped her face off. Anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty interpretive. Like it's a dream like thing. It's kind of like everything's kind of like everything probably means something, right? Yeah. But it's just like, you know, and it, clearly it's about her witnessing her parents, how much her parents' relationship has affected her and impacted her. I guess we start with what'd you think? What are your first? Did you like it?
I feel like this is a movie. If you told Ari Aster, "I want you to do a kids' movie," it would be very similar to this.
No, so we think the guy with the teeth is a penis.
Probably, yeah. No, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. It's a very sweet movie. It's kind of really sad if you try to figure out then, you know, and interpret what it's trying to tell you with each of its segments. It just kind of reminded me of a lot of movies I grew up watching. Like, I think we mentioned a few, Labyrinth, yeah. Dark Crystal a little bit. City of Lost Children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the list could go on. Like, what was the one with the dude in the hot air balloon or the Zeppelin? No, the hot air balloon, right? Taika Waititi was going to make like a TV series. Time Bandits. It kind of reminded me of Time Bandits. A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely some Terry Gilliam influence here.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah. Same here. I think that I really liked it too. I think I like that it feels like a kind of homemade, handmade movie, you know?
Which, it's a really smart choice, right? Because it's supposed to be this child's mind.
Yeah, and I love that juxtaposition of a child in what are supposed to be like nightmare escapes, right? Like some scenarios and stuff. Like just the contrast between it, kind of makes you feel like, oh, I want this kid to be okay, right? Because it's like she's kind of portrayed as very innocent. She's like a child. I mean, she's very young in this. I didn't catch her age or anything, but she's very young in it. And so,
like, 7 is what I heard.
Okay, yeah. So,
or, yeah, 7 or 6, something like that.
Just imagine, like, you know, a 7-year-old kid in worst nightmares you can possibly imagine is kind of the concept here. And I think they do a really good job.
I grew up in Texas where I had to take care of myself at 7 years old. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I created my own nightmares outside in the blistering heat.
Yeah. I don't miss that. Don't miss the heat. So I think that it there's a sort of like art and wonder to the storytelling. And so, and again, like, I'm surprised that I was surprised that it was pretty straightforward to follow, you know, like, it's, she kind of just moves to segment and then she kind of gets encounters like something kind of strange, bizarre or weird. And then she kind of just moves on to whatever the next part of it. While still kind of referencing that she's aware of her parents and aware of what's going on to her, right? There's like the beginning with her, like, in the, her looking through some like pair of glasses and seeing like the ambulance and like that she's being taken to a hospital and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Something I didn't have, I had a hard time following, and maybe this is just supposed to be like a more realistic, you know, approach to some of these situations. But the very beginning is more of the mom is trying to take her daughter away from that situation of a family life. Mm-hmm. So I was fully expecting the dad to be like abusive or like hit her, the child, and that was not the case. It was just, they're just not a good match anymore. That's all that's happening.
You almost want to, like, the way it's set up, it's like he's like maybe abusive or like
something like that,
sexually abusive or like hits her. No, you know what I mean?
He's,
like,
he's not a bad guy at all. It's just he's really involved in making this, writing this book. And
it's a bad marriage. It's more complicated than that.
I think it's just they are not getting along anymore, and that's all. But I think that's where the segments come into play, though, to kind of further explain how neither of them are right because they just aren't good with each other anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is much more, you know, realistic than... Well, you know, relationships are complicated, so obviously, like, it's never really ever like one person, or it usually takes two people not getting along anymore. So, and I think maybe they try to kind of, maybe like try to portray that as that it's essentially like their relationship and how it affects her and how it affects like her well-being, which is kind of like what. It's a pretty easy, like, I mean, not easy, but like, it's a, how our parents raised us, the good and the bad, is basically like who we are and why we are the way we are through those early experiences and stuff.
Yeah. The one I didn't quite, couldn't follow is, can we talk about the segments real quick?
Yeah. You want to go to spoilers?
Sure. I don't know what there is to spoil in this.
Does she wake up? Does she not? I don't know.
Hey, honestly, I think the idea is she does wake up, but I also don't know. I don't know what happened.
Well, let's go to spoilers. We'll go to the... All right, let's go to spoilers.
Wait! No, no, no. Stop, stop, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers. Well, I was going to say one of the segments. So one of the first people she meets is this musician who's playing piano for her. I didn't understand what he was supposed to represent. Playful innocence going away, I guess. Sure.
We get that song, right? We get the...
Yeah.
The Harry Nilsson song. I had to look it up, so I don't think I knew it at the top of my head. Sung by the mother, right? It's supposed to be like she would sing it to her.
Yeah. So there was that, and then that's when you see that this chattering teeth thingy that I said was birthed like an actual like white figured sort of feminine creature. That think maybe like the engineers from Prometheus sort of deal, except not as big. And then
yeah.
Turns into a gloop for whatever reason, and then has no face and rips a hole into the face that there's nothing in there. Finds some teeth, puts it in the hole void, and then it becomes chattering teeth.
Yeah, that all tracks.
Which is pretty
spooky. Which I'm assuming... yeah, very spooky. It's kind of like the... If there's one thing that's... like the antagonist, right? She's like the antagonist of this world, kind of chasing her down, which I'm assuming was the dad.
No, I don't. I don't know what that. Because ultimately, it was her. She realized it was just her fear, and it was just nothing. There was nothing to be afraid of. In the end, is what it was kind of translating into.
And she walked into the white light.
Yeah. Yeah, she was hearing her name got changed for the end, and it was just Carol Ann, Carol Ann, walking to the light, Carol Ann.
She was a huge Poltergeist fan. Something I was so glad to see.
But I was going to say, the second person she kind of meets is, it's right after the dad, you can hear the dad kind of talking through her comatose state into her dream world. Saying stuff right. Like, maybe, you know I wasn't the best dad and I should have been there more. I was just, you know, very, I really wanted to work and write this book because that's what I wanted to do to support you. But basically apologizing, you know, thinking he made all the wrong decisions. And then talking about, I always thought I would see you grow up and which I thought this was weird, but you would inevitably, you know, date a musician, a rock star, and I'd have to, you know, deal with him and blah blah blah. And I'm a fan of this guy named Tim Robinson, and that just sounds like a fucking joke sketch he would write, so I had a hard time taking that part serious. But I think that's what that second guy was supposed to be like. Oh, this would have been her future.
Okay, yeah, that kind of tracks.
But which is hard to do. It's like, I don't know if it was supposed to be like a past, future, present thing. I don't think so.
Sure.
This girl's like 2 months old. I mean, she's older than that, but you know what I mean? Like, there's no life for her to do that with.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, that guy, the emo guy, the guy that would, yeah, I assumed he was supposed to be a musician, and I think the director's idea of what a musician looks like is still My Chemical Romance from 2005. But yeah, the chatterer gets to him too after she's forced to clean this very disgusting bathroom.
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah.
Which is funny because so I think it's important to note that the director's daughter plays the main character, so it's probably easier to work with her, and she had already done the short version of it, but she's just walking around going scrub 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 scrubby scrub scrub while cleaning this bathroom. And I thought it was great because I was like, girl, you didn't do shit. This looks almost exactly the same.
Awful.
Yeah, go get some Simple Green or something. I don't know what's going on here. Fabuloso, yeah. The whole fucking thing.
They don't know. She was a redheaded white child. they don't know about that, any of that. Anything else catch your eye about it? Or?
Those sections, not so much. I mean, the whole, it's important to note that I'm just pinpointing certain areas, but every single sequence and scene that happened in this seemed to be very thought out. There's a part where she's trying to escape the chattering box guy and falls into what she thought was like a cave, but it was the innards of a mechanical sort of rhinoceros or something, right? Or was it an elephant?
No. It was a rhinoceros, yeah.
So that was pretty fun. It was cool. And it was just, I think, her remembering her dad said that she can do whatever she wants to do. there's always a way out or something. I don't know. Yeah, the fever dream aspect of it was pretty cool. Like, the, every single moment in this was done. It looked visually beautiful.
Right. Yeah.
And then you got the princess segment, which is towards the end. And is this old lady mm-hmm. who stayed up in her tower and never saw the outside world for what it was because she got stuck there. Then she felt like she was stuck there because she was in a situation she couldn't get out of, which is clearly about the mom.
Oh, I thought it was maybe her wanting to go to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, you know what?
No, I'm just kidding.
It's the same thing. No.
Just kidding. Same stuff. No. No, yeah, yeah. I got you. Yeah. It makes sense.
Because, again, I had a hard time. Like, the parents were still kind of bickering while the kid was in a comatose state.
Yeah. I'm assuming she still, like, still hears them. Yeah. So she's, like, she's comatose, right? But, like, she could still, like, hear her surroundings. She just can't, like, respond, or I guess because of the accident.
That's what I mean. Going back to the parents' relationship, it was just like they're just not good for each other, I guess, because I don't think any of them are doing anything wrong, but I hate to say that it feels like the mom was about to make erratic decisions.
Yeah, I feel like they could have, like, distilled that a little more. Like, they could have, like, talk more about why she wanted to leave.
Yeah.
Aside from not getting along, which is, like, that's plenty of reason. But if we're looking at it from a movie's point of view, it's kind of like she basically is, in the beginning of the movie, she sneaks or whatever. She sneaks out, tries to take the kid. And then she's kind of, like, super protective of the kid, stays with her and stuff like that. And I kind of thought maybe they could have, I was hoping there would be more there about why she was leaving. Aside from the fact that she didn't get along.
Yeah, it almost felt like they either needed to tone down how aggressive her character was being with her almost erratic decision-making, or really
right,
bump up the dad being more of a jerk about things and then feeling worse about the situation afterward.
Right, yeah.
Because the dad just felt like he was just like, oh, well, here we fucking go again. That's what it felt like every time. It's like, I just want to write my book. And he's like, oh, maybe you care more about that book than you care about your own family. He's like, I don't know what to say. I just want to finish this. It's like, damn, okay.
He would also, you know, I guess he was abusive in some way because he would yell and he'd be aggressive. Yeah. And, like, so I guess those things are...
Oh, but...
Things he would apologize for.
Yeah, it's important to note that when he went in and talked to his daughter... Before she went comatose, how she was saying, oh, but do you have to yell at mommy? And he just, like, took a moment and he said, like, I shouldn't have done that. I'm very sorry. Like, that was not the right thing to do. So he's good to the kid.
Mm-hmm. It's like everybody loves this kid except the parents. They don't, yeah. Maybe she's the problem. Maybe the kid's the problem. She needs to go.
I think
she's the wedge between their relationship.
This chattering box thing that she's been afraid of the whole time has just been trying to protect her from, like, nah, you don't need these memories, man. I'm telling you. Well, fuck it.
Right,
I'll take care of it for you. I'll eat them all.
Yeah. Yeah, and then she like, climbs up a ladder into the sky.
Finds a lighthouse.
The lights. White light. She walks, her eyes open, which is the end of the movie, but it's kind of like, is that, it could be interpreted many ways, right? It's like, oh, she woke up, she's alive, yay. Or it could be that she had moved on, she died or something, right?
Well, I think that's what the sort of weird end credit sequence is supposed to mean, like a hopeful little mom's hair is no longer blonde, it's been dyed her natural shade back, so she's happy. And I don't know what that means, but they're like just playing, they're all having a good time.
Women like to get their hair done. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. So
but I did, you know, you're catching the kid is just like, oh, the happiest day is when we, it's almost playing out like the beginning again.
Right,
almost, yeah, exactly, yeah. The same way, like the mom is like waking her up, like, we're gonna chase the sun, come on, get in the car. But this time the mom steps into the passenger side and then you see that the dad was already waiting for her in the car. They drive off. It's the perfect day for her. That's what was supposed to be described. And then does she stops the chattering guy.
Mm-hmm.
The teeth fall out and she sees that she's the chattering thing is just nothing. And she rips open the chattering thing and walks in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the way, in case you're wondering, if you ever go... You ever go comatose, just find the nearest chattering guy, nothing guy, and just climb right in.
There's no evil. Just
it's all in your head.
Climb, gotta get the, it's all in your head, just light everywhere. Yeah, essentially, yeah. Kind of like sentimental, right?
Yeah.
So
that, I wholeheartedly thought this girl was gonna die at the end.
I was expecting a little more, you know, a little more dark, twisted, you know, dark fantasy aspects of it. And it was actually a very sentimental, heart and sleeve type of movie.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, what it looked like and stuff.
But
very personal film.
I would say this is a very, very nice, sweet movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the director, Ryan Stephen Harris, he kind of like was, it's like he basically made the movie himself. I mean, he had other people to help him and stuff, but like it's his creation, his, you know, very personal movie he made. So very interesting personal movie he made. Alrighty. You have any other thoughts?
No.
Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give Moon Garden 7.5 wholesome family skeleton bones. No sexiness on this one.
It'd be weird. Yeah, I'm thinking about the same too. I give it about a 7 out of 10. It's good. I say very good, very watchable. I recommend, I would say, yeah. So to watch. But I don't think I can go any lower. So 7 feels right.
It feels wrong to go lower, right? It seems almost like... So I did look up. I'm like, you know, let's see if I can get any sort more information about this from somewhere else. And the best I could come up with is like a little bit of trivia. And maybe 3 different, like, very, very small YouTube channels or whatever. Nothing like ours. Nothing close to our
obviously
theme.
Yeah.
Reviewed it, too. And I was like, oh, this movie's that under the radar. They all loved it, right?
Right.
I only watched, like, 5 seconds of each of them. But, like, they all loved it. And it's just, yeah, this is, I would consider it a hidden gem. Because I'm surprised this wasn't talked about at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely see that. You know, this guy will probably go on to make more things, and hopefully it becomes more known. And you know, this movie, if not, he has this movie, which I think will find its audience, right? It's like the classic, like it's a cult movie. It's good. It just doesn't, you know, there's no audience that's aware of it yet.
Yeah.
It's gonna take time.
Well, I hope that comes true. Another classic film we reviewed.
Yeah, another cult classic. Can't wait for that guy, whatever he does next. Alrighty. Alright, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky. That's what it sounded like, chattering. Except more like chattering.
You're dead.
Teeth.